This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Boone Podcast.
If I get three pairs of shoes from a collective 14 gifts, I'm good.
On today's program, we flip the script on Booney.
With 141, his second home run in as many nights and his 37th of the year.
Today, we stick him under the lights and shove a mic in his face.
And I mean, we're flying through these tree-lined trails going 1,000 miles an hour.
He is CBS Sports Radio host and the executive producer of the Boone Podcast, Rich Herrera.
I want to know about you guys. What was life like growing up around your dad while he was playing when you guys were younger?
Now, in its fourth year, this is the one and only Rhett Boone Podcast.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's time for Journey 2 with Booney here on the Boone Podcast. I'm Rich Herrera, executive producer of the Rhett Boone Podcast. That's Rhett Boone. Booney, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, Rich.
All right,
what do we got on this exciting Turning Two with Booney?
Well, we're gonna do a couple things different. We're gonna change things up a little bit on the podcast. So, number one, we used to do a mailbag when we first started this show 4 years ago. We're gonna bring the mailbag back. So, folks, Brett has an email address: brettboone10@yahoo.com. How old are you, Brett? Does anybody still use yahoo.com? Do you still have an AOL account?
No, I have a funky account. I can't even name it, but a lot of my old things that you sign up for, they're like, you want to send an email and they're sending it to something you've never heard of before. And I'm trying to get out of that one. No, I created the Yahoo. The Yahoo is for the mailbag.
Okay.
And then, you know, I do have a Gmail account for my personal business, but Right. Yes, the Yahoo is for
the mailbag. The podcast.
You got it.
All right. I thought maybe CompuServe or Prodigy.
I think I put it on my Instagram too.
Okay. Here's the deal. If you send us a question and we use it here on the podcast, Brett's going to give you a autographed baseball card. I haven't run that by Brett, but do you have any cards you can give out?
I think we can.
All right. So if we use your
question, without a doubt,
we'll give you an autographed baseball card. So we'll get to the mailbag questions in just a second. And just a quick reminder as we do the podcast, and we've had some great guests this week, I want to remind people, please help support the podcast. Please help grow this podcast by leaving us a rating, give us a review, share with your friends, subscribe, download the Brett Boone Podcast. All right, now that that's all out of the way, let's get to the topics for this edition of Turning Two with Booney. So let's just start with the one, Brett, that everybody and their brother seems to have an opinion on, and that's Angel Hernandez.
Angel Hernandez. This is great timing because I just got off a podcast with Ted Barrett, a longtime big league umpire, 29 years. That'll be coming out next week. And he had some interesting insight. The box we see, and I've ranted and raved about the box that
this
we all see.
This is the Fox box, we call it.
We all see it on TV. It's not an accurate box. It is not how umpires are truly graded. So it really puts the umpires in a tough situation because they get a completely different grade than us with the naked eye watching a TV. What hit the line? What didn't hit the line? That being said.
So wait a second. Stop for a second. So what you're saying is I'm watching a game on NESN. Red Sox are playing.
Correct.
The baseball goes through the box, and it lights up the box like it should be a strike, and the umpire doesn't call it a strike. The announcers go crazy.
Correct. And Teddy said He said, Booney, it's a tough thing because we don't train on that box. That box should, there should be an asterisk. I think those were my words that said, this is for entertainment purposes only. This is kind of an accurate box of what we think the strike zone is. He said, but you're not taking into consideration the size of the player, all of those things. He said, we train on a different device and we get the instant feedback after the game, how we did. And so we know exactly how we did per our parameters that are set up for us, but that's not what that box is that we see on TV. Those are entertainment purposes. Okay. All that aside, as players, we have our own grading system. At least when I played, you walk in, we didn't have that box. No. We knew what a ball was. We knew what a strike was. And Teddy alluded to this. The umpires established their strike zone early in the game and stick to that strike zone. And the best guys did establish that. That might be a little farther outside than you're used to, but I know that's a strike. Inside, he doesn't give as much. So it's a fair strike zone, and they call the game as best humanly possible. The best umpires were very consistent in that strike zone, and every single player on both sides of the field that day knew what that strike zone was.
So
that
was our. So you didn't care whether it was a pitcher's zone or a hitter's zone.
We just need to know consistent. Let us know what the zone is, okay? Angel Hernandez, I never had a problem with personally as a man, but I tried to set it up this way. There's superstars, there's all-stars, there's good players, and then there's the player that's probably grabbing that last roster spot. He doesn't know whether he's coming or going. He doesn't know if he's going to have a uni on a day-to-day basis in his locker at the big league level. And I explained to Teddy, that's how we thought of Angel Hernandez as players. He was a big league umpire, but he was one of the worst in the league. And that reputation has preceded him. He still continues to be that guy amongst players, in their opinion. Still a big league umpire, but definitely one of the worst in the game. That's my perspective. It's not a personal thing. He's just not as good as the other guys, in my opinion.
Okay, so let's take the word worst, because I've said this over and over again. I wish baseball would let us see the grading sheets after every game. And I think
they don't want to do that, though. They don't want to do that. Right.
And the reason they tell me that they won't, and I've asked at the highest levels of the game, why not? Again, I think we've mentioned this in the podcast before, Brett. I was so interested in the inner workings of that third team. You have the home team, the visiting team. The third team on the field that we never pay attention to is the umpires. I was so interested in that, I actually went to umpire school down at the RBI Academy in Compton. So I know the people that are intimately involved in the umpire process, the supervisors. And I've always asked, why don't you tell us how good the staff is? They go, that's great, because whoever has the top score, we're all going to know who it is. Whoever has the bottom score, as soon as the game starts, the player's going to be chirping, the players are going to be questioning, the manager's going to be chirping, the crowd's going to be chirping, and he won't be able to run a game. So that's why we don't do it. So when you talk about Angel Hernandez and you use the pejorative term, the worst, does that make him the worst of Major League Baseball umpires? And you think, oh my gosh, this guy's awful. And then now it becomes a huge dog pile. But I also want to remember that he's the best, one of the best 40, 50 umpires in the world. He just happens to rank number 50 of the best in the world.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think it's fair. And there's some other guys out there. Angel's just the most famous of blowing some big calls.
Right.
There's a lot of umpires out there that when I was playing, they were behind the plate. And as hitters, we'd be like, all right, guys, you got to be ready today. And it wasn't a personal thing. These guys, as players, respect effort and protect and respect integrity. As long as you're giving me your best effort back there,
right?
You have so much ability, just like a player, you know. And it's like, is it better to be the worst player on a big league roster or the best player on a triple A roster? Well, I would argue for it's better to be in the big leagues. The pay is a little bit better. So yes, you come through the minor leagues, and man, there are some umpires. I watch my son's games now at the minor league level, And these umpires, I'll come away from a game, go, wow, he missed a lot of pitches tonight. Now, he missed a lot of pitches to my naked eye. Right. That's what I see during the game. I know I can close my eyes and kind of see what is a strike and what is a ball. Now, that's changing because they have a actual certified, we don't know what it is.
I do.
But the but the umpires know what it is.
Right.
There was nothing as players when we trained through the early 2000s. We didn't have protocol. We didn't have a strike zone that we trained on.
No.
We kind of knew what the strike zone was. Interesting point. Teddy said today's baseball players, the guys getting in the box, they do know what the strike zone is.
Yes.
And he says, and it, so it's not as subjective as it used to be in my day. And he said he kind of liked the old day better when it was a subjective. We established our strike zone. We did the best job we could. Nowadays, there is actually a strike zone that only the players on the field and the umpires truly know what that is.
And we go back to your time. I worked for Sandy Alderson, who ran the Oakland A's. Then he went on to the commissioner's office. And one of the things that bothered Sandy was when you guys would have hitters meetings and pitchers meetings, you'd have to go over the hitters, but then you'd also have to go over the umpires. And Sandy just said, wait a minute, why is it my guys have to adjust? Angel Hernandez, Joe West, Jim McKeon, any of these umpires. And he says, I want a uniform strike zone for everybody. So go back to your day when Terry Pooley would have a different strike zone than give me somebody, Tim Cheater or somebody like that. How did that work when day to day the strike zone was going to be bigger, smaller?
We knew who the guys were. We knew who the pitchers umpires were. We knew who the hitters umpires were. But as long as we knew that going in, yeah, as hitters, we don't like a guy back there with a hitter with a pitcher strike zone, but we have to deal with it that particular day. They have a zone, what they think in their mind is the zone, and they're going to establish that. Once again, all players care about is consistency. If that particular umpire that day is calling the high strike, Brett Boone as the hitter knows, hey, that's a high strike with two strikes. I can't take that pitch. Now, tomorrow night's umpire is a low ball umpire. So that high strike is a ball. I'll know that going in. So I have that knowledge. So if he calls a high, you know, that high ball umpire, if he calls a high strike on me and I know, and it's been a high strike all day, I really don't have a beef. I knew the strike zone because the low strike he's not calling, and I'm getting that call. So it's a give and take. It's the human element to the umpth degree. And today they've taken that away. My thing is this, if you're going to have that uniform strike zone in every other sport at the highest level, there are hardcore rules. There's not interpretation left up for interpretation. So if we're going to do that uniform, and that's going to do with the umpires, and it's still not a perfect science, that Teddy pointed that out. It's still not a perfect science. They're still working on it. They're getting better and better. If they're going to do that, isn't the only way to do that really is to have the computer call balls and strikes, at least all of us as hitters. Okay. We've changed the rules. It's not a strike zone that is established by the individual. We're taking the human element out of this. Here's your strike zone players. Here's your strike zone pitchers. You have this information. You may train with it. You know exactly what a ball is, what a strike is. And now we go there and at least there's not, oh, so-and-so's behind the plate today. So, no, it's the same guy behind the plate every single day. I think it would be easier to train in my mind for my eyes what exactly a strike is and a ball is on a day-in and day-out basis.
All right, I'm going to get to the ABS system that's coming to baseball before we know it. But let me go back and ask you one more thing. Angel Hernandez is really the last umpire that if you walked in a room, people might know who he is. He's the last one with any type of personality. You played for Lou Piniella. You would watch Lugo out there and just have a meltdown. But you also had umpires with personalities back then. I mentioned the late, great Jim McKeon, a really good friend of mine. He had a personality back there. You know, back in your dad's day, there were a lot of umpires with personalities. Ron Luciano.
Yeah. Kenny Kaiser,
the former pro wrestler.
Eric Gregg.
There are a lot of guys with personalities. I was watching.
There was a lot more. There were a lot more Joe West back in my day.
Yes. Yes. Because the first, I think it's going through the minor leagues. You have to use the proper same technique. And then once you got, this is old school. Once you got to AAA in the big leagues, then you could have a little bit of style and panache. Do you miss those days when you had umpires with some personalities? Just, you know, we watch Aaron get kicked out of games all the time, but I don't see anybody screaming in Aaron's face the way that old school umpires would scream in Lou's face going back and forth with spittle coming out of their mouth.
No, it's a different world and it's a different game. And Teddy pointed that out as well. I hate to keep referring to it, but it's fresh on my mind coming off that interview. And he
and
said,
it's coming out next week, by the way. We'll just give you a little preview.
Yeah, next Monday. And he kept telling me, he said, you know, it's different, Booney. We used to sit there and he goes, I remember you giving me health tips and going to get these natural supplements and my stomach was hurting. And you told me, hey, go down to the store and get this. And he goes,
go to Pioneer Square and go do that.
Yeah, next. He goes, next trip in. I said, hey, Booney, thanks. We had those kind of conversations. It went beyond the game and balls and strikes. I remember coming out to second base and, hey, what's a good place to eat, Booney? Where should I go? Last time I went to so-and-so, I need a new place. So we had that type of rapport with one another. And I said, tell me if I'm wrong. I said, this is just me, the fan, watching the game. I'm not down on the field anymore. I said, it seems it's different now. It's not as personal. It seems more robotic, more professional. He said, absolutely, the game's changed. He said, that's the one thing that he missed late in his career.
Well, think about it. If you look at the umpires, Norm, you talk about all these old school umpires, Ken Kaiser, and umpires like that, Joe West. They were big rotund men, right? Just, and I think about this, it's kind of like golfing. We had Brendel Chambly on the other day, and he talked about it. You know, when he first came in, there were big guys that smoked cigarettes and in between holes, they were in a horrible shape. And that's what the PGA was. Now they're all wearing skinny jeans and doing Pilates, and they're all in such great shape. You look at the umpires now, they all look like they all look the same. They're all in great shape. You don't see any big fat guys. You don't see any personality.
It's funny. I see it at the minor league level. And these guys walk out, and it's like they walk like robots.
Yeah.
Boom. Boom, boom. They all have the same physique. They have the same haircut. It's seriously like they're computer generated. They all
it's like they're in the military.
Right. It's like they run to a certain plate and out.
Yes.
And then they turn like it's almost like a Terminator.
It's their move. Technique.
Yeah. And it's unbelievable. It doesn't look like a lot of fun to me. Now, that being said, I'm not out on the field, so I truly don't know. I know my generation. Don't we always fall back to our
back in
the great times when I played it, and I really enjoyed my time. I don't know what it truly is like. I haven't been out at second base in a big league game for a long time. So there might be some guys out there that have a good rapport, but it just the optics right now, when I watch a game as a fan, I don't see the interaction like we used to have.
Well, the other part of that is we had two different staffs when you played, American League staff, National League staff,
right,
rotated around. Now I have one Major League staff, so they might come to Dodger Stadium once a year. They might see the Dodgers once on the road, once at home, and that's it. You would see the same guys over and over and over again. It got to build a rapport. By the way, the ABS system is coming down to the minor leagues. They're working on it right now, and Brett, that's going to be one where the adjustment last year was the bottom of the strike zone was too high, too many walks. So they've adjusted it and they're trying to calibrate it just right. But it's coming. It's coming at baseball. And as a hitter, you don't know exactly where it is. And if you don't like the pitch, you tap the top of your head and you get to look.
Right. And I think, you know, as much as we like reminiscing of the past and the old school, and I've always been a purist and I love the game, as you know, keep it as much of the same to keep that just, I don't know what the word is, but I like it to keep it the same. But going forward, I have to admit, I'm very open-minded now to new things in the game, and you got to evolve with the game. I've got to admit, a lot of the changes that have been made at first, as pessimistic as I am, I've really kind of more times than not said, you know, I think that was a good change for the game. I think you need to change with the times. It's 2024. It's not 1990. So we've got to get out of that, because if you don't change with this game, it'll run you over. And I think for the most part, the changes have been for the better. I you know, there's a few instances where, no, I like to see the old school. I like that, you know, that I like being able to run over the catcher. I like being able to take me out at second base. But for the most part, I love the pitch count. I love the instant replay, especially in a big time situation, a big game. You got to get that call right. So I think the game, for the most part, has changed for the better.
All right, let me ask you one last thing on Angel Hernandez. A lot of criticism. Is it fair or is it dogpiling?
Well, I think it's people that have never been on the field and actually lived through games with Angel Hernandez. They have no clue what it's really like. Angel's not like, he doesn't make every call as the worst, but it seems that more times than not, he gets exposed. A lot of it has to do with how he's perceived on the field, his body language, a perceived arrogance, which I really don't think there is.
Technology doesn't help him.
Yeah, and the thing is, he's just not one of the better umpires, never has been. So yeah, it's an easy punching bag, but at the same time, you know, he's been around a long time. He's been in the bottom echelon. In once again, right. I'm going to caveat this with, in players' minds,
right?
The guys on the ground, the guys in the clubhouse that talk about umpires, he's always been in the lower tier when we rank umpires as far as quality and consistency. So it doesn't surprise me now that he's the whooping boy, and we'll see where this leads. But yeah, he's never been one of the good ones. It's not a personal thing. Just he's always been in the lower tier of umpires and their ability to stay consistent in the players' eyes.
I think that's pretty fair. I will throw this out at you, though. When you look to see who does the postseason, it's the umpires with the highest grades. So if you ever see Angel in the postseason, the All-Star game, that's a reward. They get bonuses for that. So if you have a bad game behind the plate and you're consistently at the bottom, you never get any postseason, and it's like a playoff share.
Yeah.
My personal opinion on this, Brett, is I think it's lazy. I see all these clowns on social media. I see all these clowns on television. I see all these clowns on YouTube. And some of these are pretty big names that are just kind of laughing and mocking, and they just go, oh, he's the worst. He should be fired. I think it's dogpiling. I think they're lazy because it's just something that everybody's jumping on in a dogpile, and they don't really have any insight to any of this, and I'm very disappointed. I think you're right. Angel's probably ranked towards the bottom in most players' eyes. I think he's probably in the bottom half of the staff, but the way that everybody's dogpiling on him, it's just lazy from the commentators.
Well,
for the writers.
I think it has something to do with the lawsuit that he filed years ago.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of that after effects of that. I think there's a lot of things that lead to that. I mean, there's some other guys. CB Buckner's still around. CB Buckner's a great guy, always considered in the Angel Hernandez category amongst players.
And there's always going to be somebody in that category.
There's got to be a guy that's the 25th, 26th in today's game, man on the roster. There's always got to be those guys. And like Ted says, is it better to be the 26th man on a big league roster or the number one guy in a AAA roster?
Bingo. All right, let's move on. John Sterling, the great voice of the New York Yankees, is retiring. I was going to ask you, Brett, what's the relationship between the play-by-play voice of the team and a player?
Say that again.
John Sterling's retiring from the New York Yankees. What's the relationship between the players and the broadcaster that's the voice of the team? Because you've had some pretty good ones.
It depends. I've had David Niehaus. I've had Marty Brenneman, a couple of huge name Hall of Fame type announcers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That there's no perfect answer to this. Depends who you are, depends your relationship personally with that announcer. Marty Brenneman, a very stand-up, in your face, I don't care who you are, I'm I'm the broadcaster here, and I'll be, I was here long before you arrived, and I'll be here long after you leave. That's Marty's attitude. Right. Now, I always had a good rapport with Marty. I had some great years in Cincinnati. I had some humbling years in Cincinnati. And as players, especially as hitters, we see more than you think we see. Every time when we were on offense, anytime I wasn't hitting or on the bases, I was up in the clubhouse watching video, watching the current game, listening to the announcer. So we listen, see, hear everything. And if we don't hear it, we're going to have a teammate that said, "Hey, Booney, Marty said something about you when you weren't there. You'll go rewind the tape." So we know everything you're saying. Marty was always fair to me. He was always fair. He was critical when I wasn't playing well, but he was critical in a professional way. Now, there's some other players that Marty had some problems with, and they had with him. It's an individual relationship. Same thing with David Niehaus. Niehaus, my years with him, I had some big years. David was always great to me. But for the most part, these guys are professional. They have a job to do as players. We understand that. You've got to be critical. If you just comb over and go over everything and have that homer mentality, you're going to lose respect to the audience, I think. And the audience is going to say, "Oh, yeah, he always takes the high road." Sometimes these guys have to be criticized. And I agree with that. If you're going to make millions and millions and millions of dollars and be the face of a franchise or one of the main guys in that franchise, I think there's a price that comes with that. You're going to get the overwhelming praise when things are going good. But I think you also have to be a pro and stand up. And when things aren't going good and you're not pulling your end of the bargain, making millions of dollars, you need to be held accountable. And I think you need to answer to that. So as long as you do it in a professional manner, I think good critique is honest. It keeps the integrity of the game. It keeps the integrity of the simulcast. And at least the audience says, "Hey, he was critical there and he should have been, but he didn't go over the line. He wasn't unprofessional about it. He was professional." But nevertheless, I think you need to be criticized and held accountable. We know what we sign up for, and we're fortunate as Major League Baseball players, especially nowadays, to make the amount of money you make. There's a price that comes with that. You're going to be criticized. If you want to be that 26, going back to the umpire argument, if you want to be that 26 man on the roster and make the minimum, well, that's fine. You're not going to be criticized because nobody expects much out of you. Nobody's going to put the mic in front of your face. But if you want to be the superstar that hits third in the lineup and make $15, $20 million, when things aren't going good, the mics are going to be in your face, and you're going to have to answer for it.
I think it's interesting, though. So on Infinity Sports Network, I talk, and I'm never going to see anybody. So if I ran my mouth about your brother all day long, I see Aaron once a year. If I'm John Sterling and I'm on the Yankees traveling party, I'm not only seeing Aaron every day, but I'm in the hotel and in the charter and on the plane. Right. And going through TSA with you, and we're in the hotel together. I think it's interesting that you have to keep your objectivity, and you have to criticize when criticisms do. I used to couch it with words like "he's scuffling," because I know you're trying and you're struggling, but I know you're putting the work in because I see it. And sometimes I've had players that got on me because they thought I didn't defend them enough on the post-game shows when players would call. And it sometimes it's a little uncomfortable because you have a job to do. They have a job to do. And sometimes those jobs don't necessarily align, especially when you're spending so much time together on the road.
And it's a tough job in the press or being a play-by-play guy. I mean, it is a tough job because you do live with one another. If you're a beat writer on the beat, I see you every single day. So what you write in the paper, or now what's going to be on Twitter, what's going to be on social media, I'm going to see that. You know it. I know it. We have a relationship in the clubhouse. We have a professional relationship. We might have a friendly relationship. So it makes the friendly relationships going to make your job a lot harder when you've got to write a negative comment or a negative article or critique me if we're friends. Same as in the booth. You become friends with these guys that travel with the team. I was buddies with David Niehaus. Mm-hmm. I'm buddies with Rick Riz, who's up in the booth. They're traveling with me. I see them every flight, every morning, every getaway day in the lobby. We're running into each other. So it's not the easiest of relationships. But if you take into consideration, he's got a job to do, I've got a job to do. He's got to critique me when I need to be critiqued, and I need to be able to handle that and not be sensitive. But all I ever asked of these guys is, critique me, that's fine. When I'm not playing good, I need to be called out on it. Just do it in a professional way and not in a demeaning way.
Don't make it personal.
Right. For the most part in my career, I felt that the guys were pretty darn fair to me, and I really didn't have a beef with too many people.
Let's go back to Sterling for just a minute. You've heard so many of his calls over the years. Some have gone the Boone family way. Some have gone against the Boone family, right?
Right.
Can you do a John Sterling impersonation?
I can't. Aaron's the impersonation guy. I don't know any of that.
Come on. The Yankees win.
Yeah, it's
no, come
it's
on. Give me a good one. Give me a good one.
No, I can't give you one. That's not a part of my brand traits. I'm told behind the scenes my brand traits are X, Y, and Z.
Come on.
Doing that is not one of my brand traits.
The Yankees win.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not remember that? It's almost like the gentleman who passed away was on the PA for the Yankees for years and years. Oh, Bob.
No, batting.
I mean, here, number two.
Yeah.
Those are just things in the game that are ingrained in us, especially growing up. And it doesn't hurt that you're the New York Yankees, the highest, most iconic franchise, maybe in all of sports, definitely in all of baseball, with the most championships. So to hear that, yeah, that's something that's just, it's never going away. It's Yankees lore. It's like number two. See, I can do that. I can do the Shepherd. Now batting number two, Derek Jeter.
All right, next time Uncle Aaron comes on the podcast, we're going to have to ask him for a couple impersonations.
Now I got to listen to Sue, right?
Now you got to hear Susan Walden, yeah. Michael Kay, and the rest of that. So do you get a kick out of hearing your highlights, whether it was Marty Brenneman calling a Brett Boone highlight or Dave Niehaus, you know, break out the mustard grandma?
I think, as long as it's in a positive breath.
No, the highlights, not your lowlights. I'm not asking for your error.
Big
Brett Boone hit.
I've got to be honest. As a player, don't really care.
But now, I mean.
Sure, it's cool. You break out the rye bread and mustard grandma. It's grand salami time. That's Dave Niehaus. The thing that's great about that is they made a bottle opener that I can open a Coke or beer or whatever you want to open with. And it has the swing and the pitch. And I forget how it goes. But Brett Boone has just hit a grand salami. Break out the rye. So that's fun for me because they made a bottle cap opener.
That is awesome.
With Dave Niehaus call of me happened to hit a grand slam. So yes, I appreciate that now, but in the moment,
I got to look on eBay to find one.
Watching a highlight. You really, as a player, you really don't care about the call. You care about what happened.
Okay. But now as a veteran, as an alumni, does it seem like you, or does it seem like another person? I asked this of a friend of mine. And her dad was a famous actor. And when her dad passed away, I said to her, I said, well, you know what? I kept messages, and I have video of my dad. So when I miss him, I can listen to the video. I can listen to his voicemail. I can listen to the messages. I said, you've got all of your dad's films and television shows or commercials that he did. And she goes, no, it's just not my dad. It's not him. It's a character. So when I show Brett Boone a highlight, like John Miller calling your very first hit, right, Mariners versus the Orioles, does that really seem like you, or does it seem like a character?
I still think, I mean, it's a long time ago, 1992.
I know, I'm surprised it's not in black and white.
It's still, you know, because I don't think, I'm getting a little bit older. My kids will point that out to me.
Right.
But I'm not at a point in life where I still feel like that guy. Sometimes well, not that guy, but the guy at the end of my career, I can still really relate to. Right,
You have the Sports Illustrated behind you. Yeah, turn around, look at it.
I still relate.
Is that you?
Right. And I still relate to that guy. I still, I think I look like him, even though I get pictures back once in a while. I'm like, yeah, I look a little older than that guy, but I still can relate to that part of my life where it doesn't feel that far removed from me.
Okay.
Now that kid in 1992, my first base hit, and I see that fresh faced kid on the screen and I look like I'm 18 years old. Now I don't really relate to that guy anymore. I don't remember being that young, but that guy at the end of his career, that was 36, 37 years old. I still relate to him a little bit because I still think I'm, you know, I've grown and I think I've matured since then, but I still relate to that guy a little bit. I still think I kind of look like him and I kind of still have the personality that that guy had. So that doesn't look like a distant memory to me. That looks like a memory that's getting a little farther away, but no, I still can relate to that guy. It's not some fiction character.
The Yankees win. Right. Time for the mailbag. You ready?
You got it.
All right. So we have three questions. And again, something we're bringing back. If you send us a question, we use it on the podcast to BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. Remember, only one T. His mom didn't want him to have two T's. She only gave him one. Why don't you have two T's in your name?
I think I was named after Brett Maverick, who I believe was a Cowboy back in the day, and he had one T.
Oh, James.
There's only a few of us. There's only a few of us. There's.
Will you ask Sue that for me?
Brett Saberhagen is a one T
right.
guy. Brett Favre.
Does he have one T?
He's a two T guy.
He's a two T guy. Brett Maverick was James Garner, I believe.
Yes, that's all what right. I was named after. So
really,
all right.
That guy was a war hero. Did you know that?
Well, that's so am I.
Yeah. I'm not going to go there. All right. Brett Boone, 10 at yahoo.com because his Prodigy account got canceled and he doesn't have AOL anymore. So that's the email address, Brett Boone, 10 at yahoo.com. First question comes from Greg Larson in Redmond. I think that's up in Washington. What does a hitter do when an umpire misses a pitch?
Now, I can speak for my day
and
what I teach. What I would do is I always try to be respectful. I never turn to him, get eye contact so the TV or the audience can see me. But usually what I'm going to say under my breath is, that's a ball. You got to get better with that. That's off the plate. It depends. If I know it's a ball, that's off the plate. Joey. You got to get better. That's a ball. Booney, no, I think I had it on the corner. I'm just telling you that's a ball. Now, the reason is I'm going to have respect for him. At the same time, I want to establish that the next time that same pitch is thrown, you think about that conversation we just had. Because he's not in the moment never going to admit that he missed a call. But it might go, you know, he might have a point there. It might be off. Now, the next time that pitch is there, I'm going to get the benefit of the doubt. So there's twofold why I argue.
Does a catcher ever tell you, shut up, Booney?
Never.
Catcher doesn't say anything.
Never.
What about if the catcher?
Then we're probably going to have a little fight.
Okay.
We're probably going to have a problem.
Now, if the catcher.
It's none of his business.
Now, if the catcher says, hey, come on, you missed that one. What do you say?
That's not my jurisdiction. I keep my mouth shut. That's between him and the umpire. Words that I have with the umpire, between me and the umpire, the catcher is not involved. He never has a thing to say about it. And if the catcher has a problem, he's bitching to the ump. I feel like that's none of my business. I stay out of it.
Interesting. All right, Greg, you have a Brett Boone autographed baseball card coming your way. CJ, Florida, says, hey, Booney, you talk a lot about golf on the podcast. I got a question. How good are you?
Man. You know, I've gotten worse. I'm the same player I was in 1994, but my index is a little bit higher. I'm just one of those guys that never practiced. Got the same swing. I tinker with it here and there.
You don't take lessons.
I don't take lessons. I don't practice ever. And I'm basically the same guy. I'm the same guy that on any given day, I can go out and shoot 75 from the back tees at any course. And the next day on that same course from the up tees, I can shoot 86. So my spread is really big, so I have a problem with that. When I'm getting shot, sometimes I can really beat you up, and sometimes I can really get beat. So I'm the similar guy. I just think I'm a little My back bothers me on occasion. So physically, some days at the course, like anybody that's our age, you have aches and pains. That when I was 20 years old, I never had an ache and I never had a pain. So it was never a physical thing. So sometimes I'll have a day where, oh, my hand hurts. You know, I got a little tendonitis or my elbow and it's affecting my swing, my back at impact. I make a little tweak so I'm not hitting the ball flush. I'm the same guy. I'm a, I think last time I checked, I was a 7.8 index. So if you're a golfer, you know what that means. I'm pretty much okay player. In my group, I'm usually the worst player in the group.
Okay. Last one. Patrick, no city, no name, or no city. Wants to know, cats or dogs?
Oh, dog. Absolutely dogs. Although, you know, cats, when I was a kid, my mom took in a few cats. And I'm like, I don't want cats around my house. And I ended up loving the cats. So I kind of like animals. I say I don't like dogs. Now I got a new dog, Milo. He's the greatest. He's my buddy. And I was the guy that said, we're not getting a dog. They're a pain in the neck. And when they pass away one day, I've got to be there because nobody else has the stones to show up for when you have to put a dog down. But I was all against this Milo guy. And once again, he's heartstrings. He's my buddy.
Is he your dog or is he the family dog?
Family dog.
But, okay.
And I wanted nothing to do with it. I didn't want to get a dog. Now, who takes him to the beach every day? This guy.
That's awesome. All right. That's going to do it for Tourney 2 with Booney. Appreciate everybody. Don't forget, email address brettboone10@yahoo.com. All of the questions today in our mailbag. You have a Brett Boone autograph baseball card coming your way. So, Booney, what do we have coming up next week? You already mentioned the umpire coming up.
Yeah, we've got Teddy Barrett. He'll be on Monday, and then we're gonna get an update from Seattle. Rick Riz, the voice of the Seattle Mariners, present day, is gonna be our guest, and he's gonna chime in on early in the season what's going on. Recently, Seattle's turned it around, so hopefully they'll keep it turned around going into next week, and that'll be on next Wednesday. Mike Blauer's another guy that's been the voice of the Mariners for a lot of years. He's going to be joining us on Mariner Talk. And then we've got a few others in the hopper. We got an interesting one coming up on May 2nd is the year. May 2nd
is the anniversary.
2002 is the anniversary of Mike Cameron hitting 4 home runs. I'm trying to put together a podcast. It's going to be Jim Parquet, myself, Mike Cameron, maybe John Rooney, who was on the call, him and Dave Niehaus for the Mariners. John Rooney at the time, Chicago White Sox, now with the St. Louis Cardinals, was on the call. Hopefully we're going to try to wrangle him. So get the 4 of us, 5 of us total, including Rooney, on that historic day where Mike Cameron hit 4 home runs. John Roush would be the other pitcher and on who, that side.
What did you do that day?
I hit two. Cammy and I went back to back in the first inning twice. Only teammates ever to do it. End of the day, Cammy had 4. I still had 2. I felt like I had a bad day after watching him hit 4 straight. And I told him, and I say this to this day, eventually, as time gets far enough away from us, I'll be the one that hit the 4 and he'll hit the 2. I'll flip the script on.
All right, all that coming up here on the Booney Podcast. For all of us, don't forget, leave us a rating, leave us a review, share with your friends, subscribe, and thanks for joining us, everybody.